College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Sports Talk, Mike Hoss. Charlie Long is with me tonight as we take you to 8 o'clock, talking a little Pelicans, of course, talking some SEC media days. The Pelicans play at 8:30, and we'll kind of wrap things up throughout the rest of this hour, you know, talking about the Saints as they will be in training camp. We will be talking about the very first practice at this time next week, Wednesday, the 23rd. So we'll get things going in Metairie for a while, then off to Irvine, California for 10 days, which was a bit of a surprise to me. I thought they'd be there some. I thought they'd go there a little bit prior to the Charger week game, practice with the Chargers, then play the Chargers. So I was like way off. Like, I think it's going to be so weird to play that game on the Chargers and go back to Irvine.
Right.
Right? Get on a bus and go back to Irvine for like 4 days of practices. So it's, I mean, it's, you know, you make the most of that because they're going to hit them pretty hard. I mean, it's not like you're going, you know, 2 days in Metairie, then off to California, right? It's the 22nd through August 5th in Metairie. So they're going to get their share of heat and humidity.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Mike, because like you said, we're a week away from training camp. But then as soon as we get to it, when do the pads come on? When do we get to see the guys in the trenches and see how they look? And that's going to be practice session number 5, which is going to be July 28th. And, you know, Monday we'll be kind of talking about, you know, how they look in the trenches, which is what I asked you last night when we had you on when I was co-hosting with Jeff. The offensive line, I'm really, really excited to see how they look as a complete unit now with 4 first-round picks and that second-round pick with Eric McCoy, the veteran center. So, you know, Cesar Ruiz, when we spoke with him, he sounded really, really excited to play next to Taliese Fuaga, who's, if you're talking about the players you're buying stock in on the Saints, I mean, he's, if not up there, top 3, maybe even number 1, as someone that stock is going to continue to soar through the roof.
Yeah, it's going to be, and it is what it is, but, and Fuaga, maybe he was, you know, a unicorn, but typically, when you draft an offensive lineman first, and tackle will get a lot more notice than some, but if you, as opposed to like a quarterback or a wide receiver or a running back, who we would talk about, had they drafted Tyler Shuck first, well, we're going to do it anyway. We're going to give you moment by moment Shuck versus Rattler versus Hayner. But we didn't, you know, Fuaga was such a stout standout almost from day one. You didn't talk about him. I mean, you kind of hope it's the same thing with Kelvin.
It's really funny because I remember last year, the one thing that we kept talking about with Tally was that nobody was taking notes on him because everything was just regular. Everything seemed normal. This is like the best thing you can give an offensive lineman is say, oh, I mean, you're just erasing whoever you're going up against. You're not a detriment, right? So that's a good thing. And it ended up being a great season for his rookie campaign at left tackle, which was the opposite when he played right tackle at Oregon State. Now he's potentially moving back over to the right side of the offensive line and playing next to Cesar Ruiz. And Cesar was fired up about that, man. Being able to play next to Eric McCoy, who he said he has like a mental connection with at this point because they played so many games together. But then also being able now to play next to Taliese Fuaga at right tackle too.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, they both, when you ask a rookie and Trevor, who was not, you know, he was willing to do pretty much anything last year. Hey, would you go and play the other side? You say, yeah, and you make the best of it. But in a perfect world, would you, if you didn't have to do it, would you do it? No, right? You know, in a perfect world, you would have had Fuaga at right, you know? And so it, you hope for Kelvin, it's the same kind of camp.
Right.
Because there's going to be a lot of focus on Shuck. And, you know, some of the players, you know, down the road, down the line of the draft, not so much Broughton, I think, but maybe Sanker, Stutzman, Quincy Riley, Devin Neal, Montevideo, and Diggs, you know. The only problem with Diggs, here's my problem with Diggs. He's number 40.
All right. He's an edge rusher.
You're a defensive end with number 40. I look at it, I go, wait, it is, and I've gotten pretty used to seeing numbers in weird places, but I'm just teasing, of course. Fidel Diggs at number 40, defensive end. But so I'm interested to see Sanker. I think some of these young guys, even though they come into positions where there are people, and I wouldn't say there's depth at safety, I think you're going to get opportunity. I think it's a great situation to come in and have. You're not asked to be the guy, but you are going to come in and get a chance to play. You're going to have Tyrann Mathieu back there. You're going to have Justin Reed. You're going to have guys who, but you're going to get opportunities.
You know, I kind of echo your sentiments from last night as well, Mike. Devin Neal and the 6th-round pick out of Kansas that put up monster numbers with the Jayhawks. When we were talking about Taliese Fuaga a little bit earlier here, you know, that offensive tackle class last year was so unbelievable. So going out and getting a stud from that class and kind of building through the strengths of a draft is exactly what the Saints did last year. This year, they waited obviously a little bit longer to do so and address the running back position. But Devin Neal coming in, is there a better situation for a 6th-round running back than coming to the Saints where you have, yes, Alvin Kamara is the guy, but after that, it's just question mark after question mark. You don't know what you have in Kendra Miller. All he's been is injured for the first couple of years of his career. And now you bring in a 6th-round guy that was super, super productive in college. I remember when we talked with Greg Cosell about this, Mike Dettillier and I did. He said that Devin Neal shows some shades of a Pro Bowl running back in James Cook. And I thought that was very, very eyebrow-raising because you know how much tape that Greg Cosell watches. He knows what he's talking about, the senior producer for NFL Films. And if he can be anywhere close to that, as a 6th-round running back, Devin Neal could be a steal for the black and gold.
No, I agree. I think already even he was one of the few guys, if you just – and I don't pay a lot of attention, but you look at not necessarily grades, but where the percentage of where he could have gone
sure.
to get him at the 184th pick was a steal. And in our booth, Jordan Fiegel is the spotter when we're home to my left. And to my far right is our statistician, Dr. Rick Weiner.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best, period. I mean, he's just, it's what he does. He's a therapist, you know, as of living in Atlanta, but this is his hobby. But he's from Kansas. And he emailed me like the night we picked Devin Neal. He goes, that is the real deal. I've seen him. I've watched him many years. He could catch the ball out of the backfield. He's always just been a guy I went for a 6th-round, and he comes into, again, what I would call, I mean, you got Kendra, you got Jones, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Cam Akers, I'm interested to, you know, really kind of see what he's got left, Jordan Mims. So he comes into a situation where there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, 8 backs, yet opportunity, right?
Right.
Opportunity.
And if you stand out, you're going to win a job. Because that's what it is. It's a lot of question marks, after, even with Cam Akers and the injury history that he has, just like Kendra Miller. Outside of Alvin Kamara, it's just question marks. And you're hoping that Devin Neal shows out throughout training camp and he earns that RB2 role. That would be awesome right off the bat. But it goes back to my point about, you know, drafting Taliese Fuaga to address the offensive tackle and a great offensive tackle class. This past year's running back class was awesome. And being able to still get someone that you feel confident can come in and contribute to this team right off the bat as a rookie and Devin Neal. The tread on the tires, he was run in Kansas. Like, he was their 1A, 1B, 1C on their offense. And he got plenty of touches. There was plenty of collegiate production that you saw from Devin Neal that made you think this guy can be a productive pro. So, and we'll see what the ceiling exactly is at the NFL level, but you feel confident with him coming into the program just based off what he was able to accomplish at the FBS level. And so, Devin Neal, once again, you went to the running back class and made sure you got one of those guys. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if you were sitting at a bar having a beer with them, what they would say about where he was. Because, I mean, you're right. Running backs went, blah, bang, all first round. Three went in the 2nd round. So you're talking 4, 5, 6, 184th. They must have just been, you know, elated. Because they didn't have it like last year when they had 3 5th-round picks. They had none this year, right? 2 in the 3rd, 2 in the 4th, and then, you know, to the 6th with Devin Neal. So that's pretty impressive. I agree, and I think that's kind of a good situation. I think you've got guys that you come in and you have opportunity, but you also have experience. But as we know, the injuries were so devastating to positions: wide receiver, offensive line. You know, I've never seen positions get eaten up as much as they did last year.
I remember talking with Mike about this ahead of the draft that, you know, maybe because the position was so loaded, you were going to see some guys fall. Mike, by my count, there were 25 running backs drafted in the 2025 NFL draft. How many of them do you think went on day three from rounds 4 through 7?
Of the 25 drafted?
Of the 25 drafted.
Now I want to say, I don't know, 10?
19. Yeah, 19. The only ones, Ashton Jeanty, obviously a first-round pick. Same thing with Amarian Hampton. Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson went almost back-to-back in the second round. R.J. Harvey was also a second-round pick to the Broncos out of UCF. And then you had Caleb Johnson go in the third round. Outside of that, 19 running backs selected from the start of the fourth round all the way to the end of the seventh round. Obviously, Devin Neal falling into that spot. Basically, kind of in the middle. Like, it runs from Bashaul Tuten, who was the second overall pick in the fourth round, all the way to Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, who was the seventh-round pick, the 29th pick in the seventh round, the running back out of Arizona to the Washington Commanders. You know, Devin Neal is kind of in the middle, a little bit kind of towards the bottom. But, yeah, 25 running backs taken from this draft class, 19 of them on day three. I think a lot of NFL teams realize, hey, we can wait and kind of get a stud. And the Saints, you know, despite him being a sixth-round pick, they feel like Devin Neal is a stud that fell into their laps.
No, I totally agree. And just the running back position as a whole went from its, you know, stock in the last 2 years went from we don't care to holy cow, we got to get somebody, right? And somebody, you know, it's amazing how much it had kind of deteriorated and how quickly it came back. And Henry, Saquon, you know, played a huge role in that. All right, take a break. This is Mike Haas, Charlie Long with you until 8 o'clock. We'll talk some Pelicans when we come back. They are playing against the NBA's defending champ, who have not lost in the Summer League yet, Oklahoma City, and the Pelicans tonight at 8:30 from the Pavilion in Las Vegas. Back after this here on WWLAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. Mike Haas and Charlie Long with you until 8 o'clock tonight. And just checking the latest on the weather forecast, the latest on Disturbance 1 Invest 93 right now, about a 40% of it becoming any kind of cyclone over the next 48 hours, and it would be the same over the next 7 days. You know, it's going to be a rainmaker for sure, right? Irrespective of any kind of wind intensity or how far it stays in the Gulf or closer to land. I think the rain factor really for the next 2 days is going to be something to watch and be careful with and always keep it here on WWL because really, you know, all of Southeast Louisiana is under this multi-day flood watch. And WWL reminds you that we're taking a tropical disturbance that could bring heavy rains and potential street flooding to our area over the next 3 days, you know, very seriously. The impact all depends on really how long the system remains on land or over open water, as I just said, in the Gulf, kind of hugging the coastline as we speak. So keep it locked right here on WWL for the latest every hour on the hour and real time at WWL.com. And download the Odyssey app so you can always stay connected to WWL. And I thought my days of looking at the National Hurricane Center 7 o'clock updates were over, but hopefully this will just be a rainmaker and even not even a big rainmaker. It's about stalling, right? If you move, we can handle a lot of things, but when these things sometimes stall, that becomes the problem. So hopefully that will not be the case. Pelicans tonight in about an hour taking on Oklahoma City. They have yet to win their 2K26 Summer League game. They lost to Minnesota on July 10th, lost against the Lakers on the 12th, and then last night lost to the Trailblazers. And tonight, back-to-back, it's game 4 against OKC. They are 3-0. There is nothing more pointless than even an NFL preseason record, than a summer league NBA record. But you want to get your guys some time, and that is exactly what is happening. You look at Antonio Reeves, Jeremiah Fears, Derek Queen. Fears averaging 14.3 points a game. He was the seventh pick. Queen averaging about 14. And I know a number that both would like to see changed, as well as Corey Brewer, who we're going to hear from in a minute, and anybody, is that Fears is averaging 5.3 turnovers a game and Queen is averaging 5.7. Again, they're rookies. This is exactly what you want. Just, if you're going to make the mistake, this is when you learn.
Right.
Right? I mean, I was looking at a website that kind of shows you, you know, hey, here's their last five games for these guys. Right? And it's like Kentucky, Colorado State, and then boom, NBA, right? I mean, they're giving you the NCAA tournament games, and they go, it puts it into kind of perspective. Like my game before this game, I was playing against college guys,
yeah,
right? And so when you see their five-game stretch, you go, oh, you know, it is perspective. But I'm interested to see. I want to see Derek Queen do well. I don't know him. I don't know much about him. I just want to see him get beyond. And I hate to see this tag of trade 23 to 13. Like, that's on him, right? He didn't have nothing to do with that.
I will say that Queen, hearing from him talk about that, he seems motivated by it. That all the people, the national outcry was that it was a terrible trade. I got into it with Jeff about it because Jeff was hyperbolic and saying that it was one of the five worst trades. It's hyperbole. You just don't know. Nobody knows what the 2026 pick is going to turn into for either the Pelicans or the Bucks. So saying one way or the other, it's hyperbole right now, especially saying it's one of the five worst trades. It's ridiculous. But I will say it has motivated Derek Queen to say, I want to prove Joe Dumars right. I want to make him look like a genius. That's quite literally, quote unquote, what he had said at his introductory press conference with the Pelicans. And we'll talk a little bit about his play, about Jeremiah Fears' play, of what we've seen from Summer League so far. I will say, though, Mike, you know, just looking at it right now, we have the game up ahead of time. I think this is Philadelphia.
And Dallas.
And Dallas, yeah, at the 2K26 Summer League. And that game is 8 minutes left to go in the second quarter. I don't think that the Pelican Summer League game is going to be starting tonight at 8:30. No. Unfortunately, they've been like the last team to play for the last couple of games that they've had. And for instance, last night when they played Portland, it was set to start at 9 o'clock. That game didn't start till like 9:45, close to 10 o'clock. And so I stayed up and watched it. Derek Queen, going back to him, I think it was the best showing for both of the two players. And when you bring up the turnovers, you know, five or so turnovers per game for each player, it feels like it's been more for both of them. That's been the main negative. And we'll hear from Corey Brewer here in just a second.
It feels like it's been more.
It feels like it's been more. Like Derek Queen last night.
Strong.
Derek Queen last night was fantastic, but I think he had seven turnovers in the game. But he showed flashes of why Dumars and Weaver were fascinated by his offensive game. We talked with Chris Nocke about this, the Maryland Terrapins color analyst for their basketball program last night. And he said, he called Derek Queen, I used the bite in the flash, he called him a quote-unquote slow burn, right? Where he kind of sneaks up on you. He's not going to be the guy that's going to be rumbling down the court and throws down a monster dunk over somebody like you've seen a couple times in Summer League. But he's going to be the guy that is just kind of consistent. He's quiet in his points. And then all of a sudden you look up, oh, another double-double from Derek Queen. And that's exactly what happened. I will say, last night was the loudest we've seen Derek Queen. Because there was that stretch at the end of the first quarter into the start of the second quarter, Mike, where he was just getting the ball every single possession. And Jeremiah Fears was not in for some of those possessions as well. But he was kind of controlling the offense, and everything was running through him, and he was getting to his spot consistently. And he has this very soft touch when he puts it up. It was going in either off the glass or going in as a swish, and you're just thinking, this is what Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver saw in this kid and trading up to go get him. Is that he's got such an interesting, advanced offensive game as just a 20-year-old that he is schooling some of these Portland Trailblazers Summer League players. And, you know, I found myself sitting there saying, cook him, DQ. Just, like, get after it. This every single time the kid, there was, like, once again, that 5 to 6 minute stretch in game time from the end of the first quarter, because the start of the first quarter was not good for Derek Queen. But the end of the first quarter into the second quarter, I was enamored with what I was seeing from Queen. I'm like, this is a guy that can contribute right off the bat.
See, I think that's what you kind of want in some
exactly.
league, right? You want to say, you know, you're going to have five turnovers, seven turnovers, but you got to, is there something I see in a stretch that I, in my head, go, all right, now put them out there with Zion and Trey. And now, you know, where does he fit? Where does this, when you see something like that, and I feel the same way kind of about Brian Brazee, that just has the ability to kind of do things that you don't normally see. When you see Derek Queen do that, and then you go, okay, then you feel like you can put where you can play him, how you can play him.
So that was one thing, and we'll play the Corey Brewer audio here in just a minute here, Mike. But Corey talked about playing him at the four, playing him at the five. Once again, this is a conversation that's going to be ongoing because, you know, what's his better position at the NBA level? He's like a 6'9.5" to 6'10" big man. He can play the five in some small ball lineups. And I think he maybe even looked a little bit more comfortable at the five. But he could also potentially play the four if he's playing next to an Eve Misi, if he's playing next to a Kevon Looney once he gets to Pelicans minutes in the regular season. So we'll just kind of have to see how it ends up going. I think when you're looking at the Pelicans rotation for the 2025 season, right off the bat, he is your backup four. He's the guy that's going to be behind Zion Williamson in the depth chart. I think that's what the plan is for Derek Queen, with some potential for him to play some minutes at the five, depending on what the rotation is looking like, depending on what the opponent's going to end up being. Derek Queen showed a lot to me last night. And I know that 17 points, 10 rebounds, it's a double-double, it's good numbers, but you know, you see some of these guys going nuts at the Summer League for 30-plus points. At the same time, I saw him go up right against the challenge of someone like Jan Hunseng, who's everybody's been talking about, the Chinese Jokic, the 16th overall pick from the draft that people are fired up about. He's a highlight machine. He's the one that you see, oh, this guy's throwing a ridiculous pass, or this guy's stepping out and hitting a three. He's the flashy big man. Derek Queen's not really that. He's kind of more of a workman's big man from what I've seen so far.
We'll take it, right? I mean, I don't care. You know, to me, it's funny. Other than maybe Misi and one of, like, to me, the fives are pretty well defined. One through fours anymore in the NBA, I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I played three guards, in high school, wings. And I'm like, come on. I know what the positions should be, but it is like, it's – And so it's interesting. And so I mean, obviously the ones, you know, bringing the ball up and, but other than that, what's weird to me, and I should be used to it. I mean, it's only July, but they're playing Summer League, is that we don't know the schedule. We're not even close to the schedule.
No.
The schedule is mid August.
Yep.
Right? We're going to be halfway, you know, mid, you know, in training camp. When the schedule comes out, except for that, you do know that for the first time, the NBA will have a preseason game in Australia, as the Pelicans will play two games down under. Now, that's got to be, oof.
I think the game times as well, Central Time, are like 11 p.m. and like 4 a.m. or something like that, Mike. So I don't know if I'll be able to catch those games. Last night was already kind of pushing it a little bit, but obviously.
It's like staying up for LSU baseball 1 a.m. after a 4-hour rain delay.
Right.
I've never been there, but I hear people who tell me about that air flight, that plane ride. I'm like, holy cow. So mid-August, we will find out the Pelican schedule. We do know on October 3rd and October 5th, they will be at Rod Laver Arena. Is everything named Rod Laver down there? Does he have all the – is everything Rod Laver? So anyway, we did talk about Corey Brewer. He's the acting head coach, the assistant coach, but the acting head coach for the Summer League. Talk about kind of what he's seen as this team looks to get that first win.
I know it's probably not the outcome that you wanted, but the team definitely fought back several times within this game. What did you like about that aspect of it?
I like that we stayed with it. You know, the first half, we didn't play the way we should have played or the way we wanted to play. Second half, we came out, we got the lead, we had the momentum, and, you know, it was tough. You know, both my ball handlers got kicked out the game. Then after that, they started applying a lot of pressure on us, and we just couldn't get in the offense. We couldn't make plays, and it's tough, you know, but we fought to the end.
Turnovers seem to be a problem even in game three here. What do you guys need to do to clean those up?
We got to figure a way out how to get in our offense. You know, teams are pressuring us. You know, when teams are pressuring you, you got to go by the guy or you got to get off the ball and have some ball movement. And that's what we haven't done.
What did you like about Derek Queen's game? Because he really seemed like he was showing different aspects of what he can do.
Derek played great. You know, I was able to play him at the four, play him at the five. He's a big-time guy. He's a playmaker. He had a great game, and we got to keep getting better. You got to keep that momentum coming out tomorrow and play better.
What is your message to players like Fears and Hoggard and the altercation that happened?
My message was, you know, it's basketball. And, you know, AJ, you know, he probably shouldn't have pushed him, but he was taking up for his teammate. And when you're taking up for your teammate in the heat of the battle, things happen. And he got kicked out, but I told everybody, this stuff's going to happen a lot in the NBA. He took up for his teammate, got kicked out. We got to move on. We got to win the game. We just couldn't win the game.
In a summer league wild schedule here, you play a back-to-back. How do you turn the page? What's got to be the main focus?
The main focus is coming out and trying to get a win. But we got to cut the turnovers. You know, turning over the ball too much, and we're getting killed.
Feel like that's been a bit of the story thus this entire summer league. You know, I mean, it's a learning example for Fears, but I mean, I don't care if you're on the playground, little league, high school, you're getting kicked out for that.
You know,
I mean, that's so blatant. No, you're taking up for your teammate. I'm all fine. It's summer league, big deal, but learn a lesson. Because that was like
the whole thing was kind of silly, though. And I was texting.
He didn't look mad.
I texted Steve about this. I was just like, why am I getting upset with summer league officiating? It's the summer league, like. But it really was kind of silly. There were multiple moments. I think Emisi got teed up as well in the game where he got just kind of aggravated at one point. He had a great sequence, which ended up being free throws for Portland, but. You know, even Misi kind of struggled last night. I know he went 1 of 11 from the field. He missed a lot of really close kind of layups, and it just didn't look comfortable on the offensive end. But he set a screen, and it was a perfect screen. They end up calling it a moving screen, which is just like, what are we doing here? The guy kind of flopped off of a great screen by Misi. He wasn't moving. And then on the opposite end, Caleb Love kind of throws an arm bar into him to try and create some space. And at the same time, when he tries to go up, Misi just swings down a hammer to block a potential dunk, and then he starts talking to him and they tee him up. I'm just like, come on, man, this is the summer league. Like, and then like the sequence that we were referencing earlier as far as what got Jeremiah Fierce kicked out, what got Sidy Sissoko kicked out, who was really, I mean, that's where it all started, was him putting his hand in like Fierce's face on the sideline. Fierce slaps his arm down, and then, you know, out of nowhere, Hoggard comes out and pushes him and shoves him. And then they throw out all three players. I'm like, you give players 10 fouls in the summer league so that they can have extended run and learn from their mistakes and learn from development. I don't think it should be a rule unless it is blatant.
Right.
Like if they start like a benchy clearing brawl, right? Then you can throw out players. Otherwise, it seems a little bit silly to throw out players. Now, as far as Jeremiah Fierce goes, just like Derek Queen, I thought he had probably one of his better performances at the summer league. You know, that 5 of 21 shooting performance against the Lakers was not great. And afterwards, Corey Brewer was talking about, you know, we know that he can get into the paint and get to the hoop offensively. He's just got to make layups, either make the layups or kick it out. And that was kind of the issue with Fierce a little bit early on. Last night, Mike, he had some finishes, eye-opening. And we all know how good his handle is, but that was one of the question marks about him, was not just his shooting, but also his finishing capabilities at the rim. Last night, he showed a couple of different layups where you're just thinking, okay, like this kid's got something cool here. At the same time, he missed a potential hammer dunk that would have been a highlight reel play. And then Fierce gets kicked out, and he misses basically the entire fourth quarter. So we weren't able to see him late. But, you know, when he was on the floor, he was, once again, every single game that you've seen from Jeremiah Fierce, he just gets into the paint at will. He's so fast. He's got a good handle. And you see kind of the building blocks of what could be a really good point guard at the NBA here. And we'll see what he does in the final two games there in Vegas.
Do you see, based on ability, not what you've seen, somebody that's on that court in Vegas who can and possibly will emerge as a three-point shooter? Right? We've seen a lot of
three-point shooting was rough last night, Mike.
It's been rough, you know. That's what I'm like, is there – you know, everybody's driving and, you know, dishing off, and it's all fine. Don't get me wrong. But I'm wondering, you know, I was looking at the stats and there's been no, they haven't taken a ton of them, right? And so I'm just wondering if just, and I'm not based on stats though, based on what you're watching a guy shoot, right?
Yeah.
You know, and just watching his flow, watching his finish, you know, that guy can, you know, shooters, you know, and I'm just wondering if he's out there or if it's somebody, you know, on the roster.
You know, the interesting thing with the young players for the Pelicans is that the major concern for Fierce was, if not his defense, because he is a smaller guard, his three-point shooting. And he doesn't look comfortable as a three-point shooter right now. He's 18 years old. He's got time to develop and grow. So it's okay. But at the same time, he's not a ready-made NBA three-point shooter right now. And I think that's kind of shown up so far in summer league. Derek Queen, on the other hand, we kind of talked about his ability to shoot as a big man. He had a three in, I think, the very end of the first game they played against Minnesota, where it looked a little bit funky coming out of his hands, but it went in. And so you're thinking, okay, well, there might be something to build upon here. I think that's probably still the only three that he's made so far in summer league. Granted, he hasn't taken many.
Right.
So we don't really know. But
Evie?
Yeah, Eve is a little bit kind of...
Peavy.
Peavy is one of those that he hit the 40% clip last year from three at Georgetown, and that's part of the reason why they took him in the second round. But he hasn't really been letting it fly that much either. Yeah.
He only played two of the three.
Yeah, the first game, Terrence Shannon went barreling into him. It was a reckless play. He got injured, so he missed the second game. That was kind of ridiculous by Terrence Shannon from Minnesota, but I'm glad that Peavy's at least okay and he's still getting some minutes at summer league.
I just feel like it's a portion of the game that has percentage wise become more important in every NBA game, and it feels like the Pelicans haven't kind of kept pace. I mean, we're trying to find one who's our one or two. We really, you should have maybe two or three. I think Trey can shoot.
Right.
I feel like I'm not saying they don't have him, but, it's become, if you don't have two or three guys that has the ability to go out and, put them up and knock them down, man, you're just going to, the game today with the amount of possessions you have without threes, you're behind the wall.
It's a little bit interesting because the Pelicans don't have like the singular player. Like Trey Murphy is their best shooter from 3-point range right now, but they have guys that are solid 3-point shooters, like a Jordan Poole, like a Sadiq Bey, like a Herb Jones, even. But yeah, I know what you're talking about, Mike. They don't have like, and especially at the guard position, DeJounte Murray's not a great 3-point shooter. He can get him up, but he's not.
I feel like he's more of a drive guy.
Right. And it's the same thing with Fierce. And Fierce is a young guard. You have the combo guard and Poole that can launch him from three. And he hit him at a pretty good clip this past year with Washington. So you have that as kind of a replacement for CJ McCollum, who is a good 3-point shooter in his own right. But then outside of, Trey, some of your wings with Bay and Jones, it's definitely a concern.
So we have one of the talking text line from the Oakland Heart talking text line. I'll be honest, I'm working on Saints. And so he says, Michael Bridges traded from the Nets to the Knicks for 5 first round picks.
Yeah, that was like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, Mikal Bridges was on their
what
team.
I'm trying to figure out what we said to trigger that.
I don't know. That is a little bit late there.
Yeah,
on the news, but
not for me. It was news to me.
Maybe it's
you kidding me?
Like talking about Trey Murphy and what his market could be, but I don't think the Pelicans are moving on from Trey. They're going to run it with this team, see what they can do, and see if they can get into the top 10 of the Western Conference. That was another debate that we've had on the show before, is like, who's closer to the postseason? Is it the Saints or the Pelicans? And even in that tough West, I feel pretty good about the Pelicans' chances to be one of those top 10 teams, get into the play-in tournament, and either have to win one or two games to get into a best-of-7 first-round series in the Western Conference.
Too. Even though, no Brandon and no CJ, I just, again, with both teams, and this is going to be, God, I hate to, if I say it this much on July 16th, I can't imagine what it's going to sound like in August. But you already said it. You don't know. And this is for the Saints and the Pelicans. Anybody who knows or think they know what the Saints are going to be, and they're going to be terrible, and they're going to be 6-11, you don't know. You have no idea. New coach, new defense, new scheme, new quarterback, possibly, from a starting standpoint. You just don't know. I don't know. And nobody knows, but the Pelicans, you stay healthy. You saw enough of them last year health-wise. When they were healthy, they can play with anybody.
I like the talent on this roster, Mike. And that's why I think the overreaction to their trade for Derek Queen has been pretty outrageous. Just see what happens. If they stay healthy, I legitimately think they have a talent to be one of the 10 best teams in the Western Conference. I don't like where Phoenix is going. Utah is going to take another gap year. Sacramento is going to come crashing down. I don't like what the Clippers have been doing this offseason. I think the Pelicans have a legitimate shot to climb into that top 10 with the talent that they have on the roster, and nobody's talking about it because all they remember is the 21-win season when they were avalanched by injuries in the first 2 months.
Right.
So I'm choosing to be optimistic about it. I like the talent on this roster.
Take a break. Charlie Long knows the best. He watches them. He watched the game last night. He's my guy for the Pels. I love to talk about the Pels with him, watch him, go see him, but not as much as I would like during football season. But hope they have a great season just like the Saints, because you don't know. Where's Mora? You just don't know. Back after this here on WWL.
College football summer is no time to slouch, because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Tomorrow on Sports Talk with Mike Dettelier and Steve Geller, we'll break down the Pelicans' play in the Las Vegas Summer League with David Grubb of The Bird. He writes at 4:40 tomorrow. Plus, Tim Brando, Fox Sports commentator, sizes up the SEC Media Days. They wrap up tomorrow as well, and the upcoming college football season. That's at 5:20. Also, Saints training camp less than a week away. How concerned should we be that Tyler Shuck still has not signed his contract with 30 others in the second round? Talked about that tonight. And then two-time national champion Jay Johnson has been cooking in the transfer portal. Zach Nagy of LSU Tigers on SI tells us about LSU baseball's newest addition. That'll be at 7:25. Huddle up, Mike and Steve, 4 to 8 on WWL and the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Mike Haas and Charlie Long, for a final minute and a half here. Don't forget, of course, Pelicans at 8:30 Saturday night, Smoothie King Center, UFC 318, Dustin Poirier against Max Holloway. Charlie, how do you feel about snakes?
Not that big of a fan, but I don't have like arachnophobia. No, it's not arachnophobia. It's
today
spiders, right?
Is World Snake Day. And I was like, I've never liked snakes. I don't like snakes. I don't care. If you like them, God bless you. I don't like them. I played golf when I was a kid and stepped on them and hated them. I don't like them. But I read an article because it is World Snake Day. They said we would be up to our eyeballs and rats and mice if we didn't have snakes.
Oh.
And you know how many, you know why people get killed by or get bit by snakes?
It's because they mess with them.
Because they try to kill them.
Oh.
That's why they say, don't try to kill the snakes. That's how you get bit.
Yeah, no, when you brought it up earlier during Triple Option, I thought you were going something with like Spencer Rattler, like rattlesnake.
It's World Snake Day. Thanks to Charlie Long in the booth. Thanks for everybody for listening. Lots coming up. Thanks for listening to Sports Talk here on WWL.
College football summer is no time to slouch, because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.